The following presentation was made available by Inspiration Express as part of the Kisser Shulchan Aruch calendar program. There are many more free lectures and resources available at www.kitzer365.org. Today's lecture is given by Rabbi Micha Cohen.
Simen Kuf Nun Gimel Hilchos Nida. The simen that we're about to begin learning deals with the laws of Nida, which is the laws of Taras HaMishpacha, Jewish family purity. Now, the basic concept that we're going to be learning about over the next 10 lessons is that when a woman has her menstrual cycle, she becomes ritually impure, Tameh. Now, in today's days, we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, so therefore we don't keep the regular laws of Tumen Tara, of ritually, being ritually impure or not. So the focus of it is really having to do with how it impacts the relationship between a husband and wife, that during this time, a husband and wife are not permitted to each other. When the woman has the status of a Nida, and then after her menstrual cycle finishes, she undergoes a Tahara process of 7 days, of 7 clean days, with internal examinations. We'll learn about them. And then, at the end, she goes to the mikvah, and then they're allowed to resume their physical relationship. Now, the Gemara tells us a very interesting idea that besides for the basic concept that the Torah tells us that husband and wife during this time of the month are not permitted to each other, there's a understanding over here that the woman's cycling, the menstrual cycle, where it begins with menstruation and then it goes and it builds up to the middle of the month where she becomes pure again, she becomes permitted to her husband again, and then it sort of tapers off at the end of the month where she gets her period once again. That's similar to the cycling of the moon, that the moon at the beginning of the month is not really visible, becomes just a little bit visible, and that sort of grows until it's fully visible and then diminishes and then starts again the following month. And what the Gemara says is that it's compared to a kala, to a bride, that a bride goes into marriage with great expectations and freshness. And in a relationship, you know, over time, you could lose that freshness. But the Torah sort of builds in these halachas, these laws, that through the cycling, just as the moon sort of goes in and out and rejuvenates itself, and that's it's a mashal, it's a comparison to the relationship between the Jewish people and Hashem and God, that relationship also has ups and downs, but it always rejuvenates itself, and that's what makes it everlasting. So to the relationship with a husband and a wife, that through this process of becoming impure and having to go to the mikvah and being not permitted, then when she does become permitted, it brings a certain newness to the marriage, and that's something that keeps the marriage strong and fresh. Another unique thing about these halachos is that this is one of the three mitzvahs that are unique for a woman, that these are special women's mitzvahs, and these are something that Jewish women have taken pride in and been very careful about for thousands of years. The siman that we're about to learn really focuses on how a woman becomes a nida, and also the proper conduct between a husband and a wife during this period of time. Now, obviously, because they're very familiar with each other, because marital relations are obviously part of their life, therefore, when she's not permitted to her husband, then they have to be extra careful. So the first part of the siman will deal with how she becomes a nida, and then he'll go on to talking about the proper conduct during the nida period until she becomes tahar, until she becomes ritually pure. And in further lessons, we'll learn about actually what is the process of the Shiva Nikiyim, of the 7 clean days, and then also about calculating the calendar, when to expect periods, and preparing to go to the mikveh, and other relevant halachas. Let's look at Sif Aleph, the first Sif in the Kisser Shulchan Aruch. This Sif discusses what type of seeing of blood makes a woman Anida, which again means that she has the status that husband and wife are not permitted to each other. Kol Isha, any woman, Shenekra Mimakara Tipas Dam, that it was dislodged from her uterus a drop of blood. the point here is the following. When we talk about Nida, when we talk about this bleeding, we're not talking about any blood. We're only talking about the blood that's from the uterine chamber, probably from the lining there, from the endometrial lining. That's what we're talking about. Blood that comes from other parts of the body, you know, certainly if it's not in that area, but even from, say, with the vagina or other areas, that's not a problem. We're only talking about the blood that actually comes from the uterus. Now, any blood that comes from the uterus, even if it's a small drop, and even if it didn't come as part of a regular menstrual period, but it came through staining, and even if that staining was caused by some trauma, let's say she did a lot of exercise or something like that, that's all going to be a problem if it comes from, again, from the uterine lining. And this is what the Kitter goes to explain to us, that even if it's a necromim karati basnam, that if it was dislodged from her uterus, even one drop of blood, a filu kolsho, even just a little bit, yiv eza ofen shiyah, whatever way it was, bein betiva kederach hanashim, whether it was the natural way, lirois bezmanim yiduim, to see at specific times, meaning her regular menstrual period, oishaloi bezmana, or not in the normal regular times, meaning staining, unexpected seeing of blood, vafilu erola eza oinus, and even if that came as a result of some sort of trauma, that because of this, some blood was issued from the uterus. She is ritually impure. She has the status of a nida. Until she counts 7 clean days, which we're going to learn about later. So basically, from the time she gets her period, see, that's around 5 days. And then another 7 days for those 12 days of the month, the husband and wife would not be permitted to each other. And then she goes to the mikvah on the 7th day of the clean days, and that's when they become permitted once again to each other. Now, the severity of one who does not keep these halachas and transgresses this halacha and has marital relations during this time, chayv karis, is a very severe transgression. It's one of kares, v'chein hi chayev es kares, and the wife, although she's perhaps passive, but she's also punishable by kares, v'al hanegir derechiba, and on touching, we're talking about physical context that's intimate, like hugging or kissing, derechiba, in a way of love, chayev malkis, is punishable by malkis, and this is following the opinion of the Rambam, that even not actual marital relations are prohibited midaraisa, that they're a Torah prohibition, whereas some hold it's only rabbinic, but again, the Kitzur is following the opinion of the Rambam that it is a Torah prohibition. In the next sif, the Kitzur will explain to us a very important rule about this concept of nida that we just learned, that when any uterine blood comes out, that it makes her anida, that there is a differentiation between something called hargasha and not hargasha. The word hargasha literally means sensation, and the Pesukim can describe different types of sensations that a woman might feel. Possibly the whole body could feel this tremor of the blood leaving the uterus, or perhaps just the opening of the uterus, perhaps just the flow of blood leaving the uterus. But all these types of sensations would make the woman tame midaraisa, meaning to say that she would have a status of anida at a Torah level. Now, if a woman does not feel the leaving of the blood, then the Gemara tells us that midaraisa, from a Torah level, she's not prohibited, but midarabanan, but the rabbis prohibited it, and because there is this differentiation, we are going to see there are some leniencies if the blood came out without any sensation that are not going to be hold true when it's going to be a case of deraisa, when it's going to be a case of Torah prohibition when it came with hargasha. Now, today's days, many women don't feel hargashas at all. They don't have any sensations. And the post can discuss exactly what to do with that. And the consensus seems to be that even a very, very slight hargash, even a very, very slight feeling would still be considered a feeling, and it could be they're just not conscious of it. So therefore, the bottom line is that when a woman has a normal menstrual cycle, we assume that there was a hargasha, we assume that there was some sort of sensation, even if she's not necessarily aware of it, and we consider it to be tamei midaraisa, we consider her status to be a derisus, a Torah status, and would not have the leniencies we're going to learn about. If it was seen through staining or something like that, then it's small amounts of blood, not during her regular cycle. Then if she didn't have a sensation, then we would assume that it's not derisus, it's not a Torah prohibition, but it would be derabbanan or binnik. So the kitzur reads like this. In Sif Beis, afilu lo hirgisha sheyotze dam mekara. Even if she did not have the sensation that we mentioned, which would make it a Torah prohibition, a Torah status of being a nida, ela shematza kesem dam b'sara, but she found a stain of blood on her body, oy b'chaluka, or on her clothing, oy b'sadina, or on her sheet, oy b'sharmakam, or in a different place, ve'ein lo litlo shabomi makam acher. And there's no reason to assume that it came anywhere else but from menstrual bleeding or from that area. Ela shabomi makara, but it came from the uterus. Harihi tameya. She is tame. Now the point is that although there is no hargasha, there is no sensation, but the rabbis decreed that it should still have a status of tame, and therefore on a practical level, it makes no difference whether there was hargasha or was not hargasha, generally, because if she finds blood, even if there was no hargasha, then she is tame. V'chol isha, and any woman, shematza ezer kesem, that she finds some sort of stain, afilo eina adam mamish, even if it's not deep red, ela she'ena lovin mamish, but she's not sure, it's not clearly white, tzricha lasa she'elos chacham, she should ask a question to a competent rabbi. Now, there's a very important point here in general, that a lot of times people assume different colors to be good or not good, and it's really important to have a competent rabbi to ask, because sometimes you could assume that it's a problem and it's really not a problem. Sometimes people assume that it is, that it's not a problem and it really is. So again, the kitzur is telling us that we have to ask someone competent. Now, that's one thing, that if it's red, even if there's no sensation, it could be a problem. Now, kiyesh b'zahar b'chiluki dinim b'inyin gadlus v'katnas ha-kesem, because there are many differentiations between the size of the kesem. Now, what the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch is referring to here is that, again, as a general rule, there is no difference whether or not a woman had a sensation or not, because even without a sensation, it is only rabbinic. It's rabbinic, it's rabbanan, but nonetheless, she is still tamei. However, there are a few exceptions. This exception that Kitzur Shulchan Aruch is referring to over here is what's known as pachus mekegris. If it's less than the amount of a gris is measured in today's standards as around the size of a penny. If it's less than that amount, if it's only rabbinic, if there was no sensation, then she would not be tameh, she would not have the status of a nida. And the reason is because in the old days, in the times of Chazal, in times of the Mishnah and the Gemara, it was very common for people to have all sorts of bed bugs and lice, and it was very common to have little stains of blood around from these insects. And therefore, when the Chazal came and said that we make this prohibition of blood without any sensation, we're only going to make it if it's larger than the amount of a penny, because less than that, we have to be concerned maybe it came from something else, so we're not going to assume it came from her unless it's larger than a penny. So that's exception number one, that without sensation, it has to be the size of a penny or larger. Now, it's important to mention that when a woman does a bedika, which we'll learn about later, when she does the internal examination and she finds blood, even if it's less than the size of a penny, it is a problem, because once it's inside her body, we don't assume that in such a place, even in the days of Chazal, there would have been insects or anything like that there. So even a little bit, we have to be concerned about. Also, there is a concern that when she does the examination and she goes inside, there could have been a sensation, there could have been a hargasha, but she wasn't sort of aware of it because she confused it with the feeling of the bedika. So therefore, any bedika, even less than this amount, could very well be a problem. But if it's just a stain found on a piece of clothing or on her body, then if it's less than the amount of a penny, a gris, then it is tar, if it's without sensation. And also, as far as that if there's another source possibly for the blood, let's say she worked with red dye or something like that, so that could be a possible way out. but again, it needs guidance, so therefore, one should ask. And what you could assume that it came from, and what you cannot assume it came from. There also could be a difference between at what time of the month she saw it, what her status was then. If she was pure, if she was not a nida at that time, then it might be more difficult to make her into a nida because she has a status of not being a nida, so you have to sort of prove it. Or the first days of the seven clean days where she just is getting over being a nida, so if she finds a little bit of blood, we have to be concerned that maybe she's a nida. Now, we mentioned that one exception of blood without sensation, without hargasha, is how much it is, that it has to be more than the size of a penny if it's not an internal examination. There are two other exceptions that it's important to know, even though it's not brought here in the Kitzer. And another one is that if it's found on something that does not contract tumah, which means that there are certain materials that the Torah says can become tameh, ritually impure, and certain materials cannot become tameh. So if it's on something like that cannot become tameh, for example, the floor, right? That's something that can't become tameh. So say she finds some blood on the floor, so even though if it was with a sensation, it will be a problem, but if it's without sensation, it's not a problem. That's a second leniency. The third one is if it's found on color garment, for certain reasons, Chazal also never prohibited that if it's without sensation. So basically, if a woman sees down with sensation or it's on a vedika, then it's always going to be a problem if it's the right color. If it's without sensation, then in order for it to be a problem, then it has to be larger than the amount of a penny, number one. Number two, it has to be on something that is makabel tumah, that does contract tumah. It's possible that, let's say, something that's 100% polyester, it's not made of linen or cotton or any of those, or wool, but from polyester, it could be that doesn't contract tumah, and it could be that a stain found on that might not be a problem. One should ask the rabbi, but that's an example. So that's a second exception. A third exception would be if it's on colored clothing, that if it's on colored clothing, it would also not make her into a nida. And the final one would be if it can be assumed that it came from some other source, let's say she had some other wound or something that could cause the blood to come out from a different part of the body, then she could possibly assume that it came from there. Now we continue here with Sif Gimel. Isha Sheir Gisha Shniftach Makaira. Now, what if a woman has a sensation that the uterus opened? Now, today this is not very common, because in general women are much weak, they don't feel these types of feelings in general. But this is what the source of this is, a Trumas Hadesh, and a very early responsa from one of the Rishonim, and he's discussing the situation where a woman felt that her womb opened. Now, then she goes and checks herself. She doesn't find anything. Now, the Trumas Hadashin's understanding is the fact that she felt that sensation, which is specifically a sensation that she only feels when something's coming out of the womb, that she has to assume something came out. Now, because generally blood comes out of the womb, not all the time, but generally, then she has to assume there was blood. If she were to check herself and she were to find a kosher color, a white or a clear or other color discharge, that would be okay. But because she didn't, we have to be concerned that maybe there was a little blood that came out, but it got lost. So therefore, afilu badkas atzma miyad, even if she checked herself right away, b'lo matzah klum, and she didn't find anything, harihi tmeya. She is tameh. Now, there are those that disagree with this Trumas Hadesh in general. And furthermore, today, when women don't have strong feelings, if a woman just had some funny feeling and she thinks maybe she saw something, it wouldn't necessarily be a problem because of this Trumas Hadesh. It would only be if it will be it's a very distinct sensation that she only feels when she gets her period, let's say, then that may be more of a question. V'tzrichim l'adiyah zayis la'anashim, says the Kitzur, one should tell the woman about it, ki habri nashim enin yoyda zayis, because many women are not aware of it. Holy matzah, she has to be men eizah leicha l'fana, but if she did find something, b'lishum tarubas admimus, and it doesn't have anything red in it, hari hi tahara, that she's tar, because we could assume that the sensation came from that discharge, and therefore she doesn't have to assume anything else. Okay, now we begin now Sif Dalet, and Sif Dalet to the rest of the Simen deals with the appropriate conduct between husband and wife during the Nida period. Now, during the Nida period, it's sort of an interesting situation because you have a husband and wife, they're married to each other, and when she's not a Nida, they're permitted to each other, and it's a mitzvah for them to be with each other. And yet now, all of a sudden, because she's a Nida, she has this issue, she has this prohibition, a very serious one, and it's her karis. So because of this unique relationship, we have to make sure that because they are used to acting intimately with each other, we have to make sure that they don't make any mistakes when she's a Nida. So because of that, even though a woman who's not a relative, who's not a wife, you know, you can pass things to, and you can do different types of things with, as long as it's not, you know, intentional to bring certain feelings of, you know, of attraction. But when it comes to during the times of Nidus, we have to be more careful with the husband and wife. At the same time, because the husband and wife are naturally close to each other, when it's not going to, in certain ways, it's not going to be as severe as a man with a woman that's not his wife, because a husband and wife remain husband and wife and remain very close and good friends throughout the month. So we're sort of going to learn over here the halachas, but also keep in mind the proper balance of how things are supposed to be. Now, the Kitzur says the following. Ksiv, the Torah says, V'l'isha b'nidas tumas le'sikrav. One should not come close to a woman who is in her status of being a nida. Read a ksiv le'sikrav, because it says he shouldn't come close. Darshina, we learn, shekomine kreva asr, that any sorts of closeness is prohibited. So therefore, what does that mean? Shula yischaik b'leika reish ima. That one shouldn't act extremely lightheaded with her. Now, we're not talking about telling a joke. What we're talking about is the type of lightheadedness that usually would bring about intimacy, and therefore that shouldn't be done when she's a Nida, for obvious reasons, because they're used to that, it could come to it, they could forget themselves. Atfil b'dvarim, even with words, hamargil erva, that could cause to come to intimacy, it shouldn't be done. But on the other hand, yichud, being secluded, is permitted, even though a regular woman is not permitted. The kivin shekvar bala, because he did have relations with her before, v'gam yesh lehet alachat shetizvah, and she's going to go to the mikvah and be permitted afterwards, like takif yitzrei, his evil inclination is not so strong, v'lai cheshinun shema yovoy ola b'isra, we're not concerned, maybe he's going to be overcome with his temptations. So I think a way of understanding the type of concern that Chazal had when a woman is a nida, as opposed to a man with other women, is that a man with other women, the concern is that his evil inclination will get the hold of him, and he won't be able to control his impulses. With a wife that's a nida, it's a little different. It's you know, being around her, we're not concerned, because they were permitted and they will be permitted, so we're not so concerned about that. What we're concerned is doing things that habitually cause them to be intimate with each other, those things we don't want them to do, because since it's like a habit, so therefore we don't want to sort of get things going in that direction. So therefore, for example, the Crazy Uplacy, one of the important svarim, says that of course you're allowed to give a present to your wife even though she's a nida. Why? Because nothing new is going to happen by the fact that you have good feelings to each other. Hopefully, in a good marriage, you have good feelings to each other all the time, neither or not neither. So that's not the issue over here. So you're going to give her a present, it's not the problem. The issue is going to be, if they're going to sleep in the same bed, then they might come to do something they shouldn't be doing. But just causing good feelings is not going to be the problem. If they're going to talk about intimate type of things, then they may lose themselves and forget and be intimate with each other. But again, but for them to be secluded with each other and do their normal things is not going to be a problem. And furthermore, we're going to see that something like a hacker, a reminder is enough. Why is a reminder enough? Because again, it's not that there's such a strong evil inclination, it's more of a habit. Whereas with a different woman, it doesn't help to have a reminder, because all the reminders in the world are not going to help if he's going to let himself fall into a trap of getting into that type of relationship. Now, let's continue here with Sif Hey. Well, Yigaba Filu Batspaktano. He should not touch her even with his small finger. Now, the reason for this, the Rush explains, is because, I'm sorry, he's not allowed to touch her. That comes from a story with a woman who her husband passed away young. And in that discussion, she tells Eliyahu HaNavi that the reason can't be because we weren't careful with these halachas, because we didn't even touch in a minor way. And the reason why touching in a minor way is prohibited with a wife that's in either, as opposed to another woman, that if it's not intentional, and say it's a doctor or something like that, would be permitted, the difference is that, again, because husband and wife, they're used to touching each other in a certain way, so therefore we're concerned that it's going to come to something it shouldn't come to. And that's why it's prohibited. So therefore, lo yigaba afilu b'aspektana, he shouldn't touch it even with a small finger, meaning even a little bit. And not only that, but you shouldn't even pass things. So this is what I started to say from the Rush. The Rush says, why shouldn't you pass things? So he says, not because it's a demonstration of chiba, of affection, but the reason is because if you're going to pass things, then if it's a small object, you might come to you might end up touching each other, and we don't want you touching. And even if it's long, because where you draw the line, so therefore we're going to make a loy plug. We're gonna say everything's a problem. And one should not accept from her hand. And even throwing from hand to hand, now the bottom line over here is touching, even if it's not affectionate, is a problem, and passing and throwing is also prohibited because it may come to touching. Sif Vav. Layuchal imam al shulchan, he should not eat at the same table together. Ellen came yesh ezeshinoi, unless he does something to remind them of the situation. Now, the reason over here is, the Rosh explains, is because in the olden days, at least, they used to have these small tables, and everyone used to eat on their own little table. And a husband and wife, they would share a table. Now it's a sign of affection that they're eating together. So, when she's in Ida, they're supposed to have separate tables. So today, we keep this, even though we have larger tables, but the idea of eating together, just the husband and wife, around one table, there is a certain level of affection there. So, it's not an uncontrollable type of thing. It's enough, you could put a hacker, something to remind us what the situation is. So what should you do? He should put a shinoi, something different. He should put something to separate between his plate and her plate. Because it's not normally on the table, even if it's another pitcher, another roll, but it's not supposed to be there. Or that she should switch places. And if, when she is permitted, they eat from the same plate, va'ata oichlim kol echa mitachar acheres, and now each one eats from their own plate, sagib hachi, it's enough. So basically, the bottom line is the following, that eating at the same table, just a husband and wife, is something that has a certain level of affection to it, and therefore we need at least a reminder that they shouldn't come to make any mistakes. So therefore, they should have something on the table that's not normally on the table, but it's an extra piece of extra loaf of bread, an extra pitcher, something to help them remind themselves of what the situation is. That'll be one option. The other option will be to switch places, says the Kitter. And the third thing the Kitter says is if normally they always share the same plate, then the very fact that they're not doing that now would be enough to remind them of that. The Kitter continues with Siv Zayin. Now the husband, specifically the husband, because he's more prone to have improper thoughts, he should not drink the leftovers from her cup. Now if someone else drank in between, say a child, so in that situation, it loses its significance, and therefore it's okay. Or it's poured into a different cup, shari, it's permitted. So again, the bottom line is that if the wife leaves over some drink in her cup, or some food on the plate, the husband's not supposed to be eating it if it's in the same cup or the same plate, but if it's, unless another person ate in between, and if it was moved over to a different plate or cup, then it's permitted. And if she drank, and he doesn't know about it, and he wants to drink from it, right? Let's say he sees this cup, and he thinks it's from one of the kids, and it's really from the wife, the halacha is, that ain't a shrichel hagile. She doesn't have to tell him that she drank from it. Why not? Because again, it's all in the mind. So since he doesn't know, so it's okay. But if he does know, so it would seem that at the end of the day, she really is a nida, so that's a problem. Then she should tell him. That's what he writes in his larger sefer. Lechem v'simla. Okay. Himutar slushtos mishir koy shaloi. Now, as we mentioned, this prohibition is only him to drink her leftovers, because he is more prone to thinking about those things, whereas the wife doesn't have the prohibition of drinking his leftovers, because she is less prone to have those types of thoughts. V'yesh oimrim d'kashem sh'asa lushtos mishir koy shaloi, that just like with drinking, you cannot drink her leftovers. Kach asa lechem mishir machal shaloi, you cannot eat her leftovers as well, and that's what we mentioned. Sif Ches. Now, so far we've covered the idea of, in general, being careful, the idea of not touching or passing, the idea of not eating on the same table without a hacker, and the idea of not drinking or eating the leftovers of the wife. Now, Sif Ches continues with a new idea in our chakos. La yishan ima b'mita achas, they should not sleep in the same bed. Now that's a very obvious thing, because that obviously is something that could very much bring them to do an aver. Afilu ein hamita michedesla, even if it's not specifically hers, but the fact that they're in the same bed is a problem. Afilu kol echa b'bigda fe'inagim zevazeh, even if each of them are clothed, because even the Gemara talks about this and says even though the clothing will remind them somewhat, but at the end of the day, it's too close in proximity, and we are concerned. Now, what if they have the same, each one has the same mattress? Even if it's in two separate beds, but the beds are touching, also the kitzur still feels that it's too close for comfort, and they need at least some sort of distance between the two beds. Now, what if they're laying on the ground? So, obviously, you're not going to say that the ground is considered one bed indefinitely. So, at least it shouldn't be face-to-face, unless there's a significant amount of space in between them. And the same would be true if they're in two beds that are very close to each other. In a way that sometimes they're face to face, afal pishe shafsik ben amitas, even if there's some sort of distance between the beds, yesh lasar, so he says there's room to say that they should have more of a distance, el kem yesh mechakrav beneim. Now, this, I believe, is not meikra din. There are those that hold that even if there's any space in between, it's enough, but the kitzur recommends if they're face to face to need a little bit more space than just a little bit. Okay. For also the habal affiliation al hamitosh mechadisla. Now, so far we've talked about sleeping in the same bed, and we said that there should be a space in between each of their sleeping surfaces. Now, what about the husband sitting on her bed? So here we're moving away from the actual sleeping in the same bed, and we're talking to someone something a little bit more removed. He's just going to sit on her bed. He shouldn't sit on a bed that's special for her, because being in her bed, even sitting on her bed, we're afraid could lead him in the wrong direction. Even if she's not there, but she's in the same city, that again could still move him in the wrong direction. Now she cannot sleep in his bed, even if he's not in it, but she can sit on it if it's not in front of him, and she doesn't have to be careful. So basically, sleeping in the same sleeping bed together is obviously prohibited. There needs to be some sort of space in between the two beds. for the husband to sleep in the bed that belongs specifically to the wife, or vice versa, is both prohibited, but for a husband to sit on the wife's bed, even not in front of her, is prohibited, but for the wife to sit on the husband's bed, not in front of him, is permitted. Okay, sif test. Now, this is even a further situation that has less resemblance to the idea of the same bed, but nonetheless, it's at least Ashkenazi custom to be careful about, and that is they shouldn't sit on a bench that moves back and forth. That would be like, say, a swing, one of those swings that fits two people. That's something where they really feel each other's weight, and they're in it together, and therefore there's a certain level of chiba, of affection there, and something that the Rishonim discussed, the early commentators talk about, and they feel that it's inappropriate. If there's something else with them, then it takes away the whole effect, and it's mutter, it's permitted. So therefore they shouldn't go in one wagon, in a little boat, people on vacation, let's say, they want to go canoeing or kayaking, just the two of them in the same boat, so that's a problem. If it's for vacation purposes, you're going to go to the gardens and vineyards. Now what about they're going on a business trip and they happen to be in a small little wagon? So this was a question asked to the Truma Sadeshin. So on that he responded, Mutter afo pisha him levadon, then it will be permitted even though it's only the two of them, as long as they're not actually touching each other. And the reason is because since this idea of sitting in the same wagon is much more far removed from the actual idea of sleeping in the same bed, so if the situation is not a situation of vacation and leisure, but it's a situation of business, so therefore we're less concerned. Now, a common application of this halacha will be sitting on the same couch, and many Paiskim can feel that if it's not on the same cushion, the couch is a heavy item, so they're not really going to feel each other's movement, so it's okay. If it's on the same cushion, there's more what to be concerned about. Sif Yud. Listakal b'shum makam migufa b'makam shadaka l'chasa. It's a place that she always keeps covered, not only when she goes out to the street, but even in the house, in front of other family members, she always keeps it covered, so then the husband shouldn't gaze there intently. But the places that are uncovered normally, right? Mutal l'stakel, he's allowed to look. Even though he enjoys. So again, here we see something where there is a leniency with the husband, and the reason is again because since she's going to be permitted in due time, therefore we're not concerned. Even though he has pleasure. Also, he should not smell her perfumes that belong to her, that she wears. And he should not hear her singing. Now, there is a discussion if she's putting a child to sleep and he's in the other room, so he doesn't have in mind to really listen to it. So then that could be okay. Sif Yod Aleph. Roylo Shetayached La Begadim Limei Nidusa. The Shulchan Aruch recommends, if she could, to have special clothing when she's in Nida. Now, the idea is not that they should look bad, but they should just look different. So it's just another way of them remembering. In order to help them remember. I have not heard of people being careful about this in today's day, but it's something brought in the Shulchan Aruch. Now, what about beautifying yourself? So if the purpose of the beautification is for her own self-esteem as a person. She always goes out with a little makeup. She always goes out with a little perfume. Deodorant for sure. So then that's obviously not the issue. And that's not really the husband's business. The issue here is if she's beautifying herself because she wants it to find favor in the eyes of her husband. So the problem is she's doing it to attract him, but it's not really the time of the month for that. On the other hand, we don't want him to get a negative image of her. So it says the following: Kaishi with difficulty, Hatirula the Chachamim permitted Shetichel v'Tifkas v'Tiskashet. She should beautify herself in various ways. The Vigdei Tzivayna v'Medidusa and other types of fancy clothing. Ela Kadesh l'Tiskan al Baila. Because at the end of the day, we don't want her to. If she's not going to present herself in a way that's favorable to the husband, even when she's a Nida, it could ultimately, give him the wrong image of her in general. Sifyud base. Like Simzeg like Kaisyain Bafanov. Now we come to a new thing. We mentioned before about putting a hacker on the table when eating, something to remind them that she's an Ida. We mentioned about not eating the leftovers. Now this is something different. They shouldn't pour each other important drinks or bring food And the reason is because that pouring or bringing itself is a showing of affection, unless they do a heker. And again, we see once more that a heker does help for these types of things, because as long as they're conscious of the fact that she's a nida, even though they are honoring each other or showing affection, it's still permitted. So lo simzig lo kais yain b'fanav, she should not pour for him a cup of wine in front of him, or even if she poured it in another room, but just to bring it in front of him, and she should not prepare his bed in front of him, but not in front of him, hakol mutar, it's all permitted. Even though he knows, but again, the problem is actually doing it in front of him. And she should not pour water for him to wash his hands and face. Even cool water. And the Paiskim say that from until she dime to wash hands in the morning, it's a mitzvah, that will be permitted. So again, we said that she should not bring him his wine or his food and directly place it in front of him. Now, what could they do about it? So Sifi Gimel tells us the following. Kishem Shahi Asura Limsaglai Esakais, just like she is prohibited to do it for him, Kahu Asura Limsagla, he can't do it for her. But like Aid Ella Afila Shlechla Kais Yainham Yuchadla, to send her a cup of wine that's special for her, Afila Hu Kais Shabracha, even if it's a Kais from a mitzvah, Asur is prohibited. Now, it's important to mention, and I believe the Kitzur was going to say it, but we'll see, is that the Gemara says that in these situations of passing something, of bringing something in front of him, if she does it in a different way, she switches her hands that she normally does it with, or she doesn't put it exactly in front of him, but off to the side a little bit, even if other people around the table don't realize, but he realizes it, so that's enough. So practically speaking, if the wife wants to bring in the husband his drink, something like that, so what she could do is a very simple thing. She just has to place it in front of him, but a little not exactly in front of him. So that enough would be a heker, it would be a reminder. And then they wouldn't have an issue of doing it. Now, it mentions over here not to pass a kodesh al bracha. Now, according to some, the problem is only if it's a special kais shabracha, something very special. Whereas if he's just passing out the kiddush to the whole family, and it's not really anything special for the wife, then it's okay. Because again, he's not showing anything so special. Sif yudal. Imhu chayla. So what about if he's sick? There's no one else that could help him except for her. So he is sick, so therefore it's less likely for him to do an aveira. Even though he's not deathly ill, but he just has fever and he doesn't feel like himself, mutaris l'shamsha shima she'im b'negiyah, if he's not going to have to actually touch him, but you'll have to bring him things and do different stuff to help him, that's okay. Rak al yitei davar acher, but she shouldn't touch him directly, but something in between. Afil akim l'ashkiva l'samchay, if she has to move him, but again, not directly touching him, that's okay. Rak shetizar b'yaisa me'achatzis panav yad davar aglov, but that's mitu l'funav, he shouldn't actually wash him or make the bed in front of him. Now, what if the wife is sick? So this is more problematic, because the man who has the larger Yetzirah, he is well. So therefore, his Yetzirah is okay. So what do you do about that? So also, even without touching, it's more stringent if for him to help her. Unless it's a very difficult situation, she after Mishim Shana, if she can't find someone else, if the husband's a doctor, and there's not another doctor as good as him, he can take her pulse or do other things, because at the end of the day, he's not doing it out of affection, he's doing it as far as to give medical care. Sif tezvav. Kol harchokas haneskareis, tzrichin lezargam yimei libuna. Now, all these things that we have to be careful about is even when she's in the Tahara process, but she hasn't gone to the mikveh yet, because at the end of the day, until she goes to the mikveh, she still has an Isser Karas. The Hainabi may Sphere Shiva Nakim, when accounting the Shiva Nakim, Vagam Achakach, even afterwards, even as Acham Litul Vazmana, if she did not go to the mikveh on time, Asur Machal Haniskar, Ad Acha Shetitvel, she's prohibited in everything mentioned until she goes to the mikveh. Now we get to the final sif of the siman, sif tezayin, isha nida
a woman who is a nida, bimei riyasa, when she's actually seeing the period, seeing the blood, kodem yimei libuna, before she starts the clean days, neogin she'ena nechneses lebeis haknesses ve'ena mispalas. There were communities that had the custom that she wouldn't go into shul or to daven. This is not a halacha, it's more of a custom. Okay, now, even according to the custom, says the Kitzur, what about times of the year when she would be very upset if she wouldn't be able to go to Shul or to Daven? Ach b'yom ne'roim. But the high holidays, the hainu b'yom rishon, the slichus of l'halon, for the first day of slichus and further, sh'rabim misasim beis haknesses, everyone's going to Shul, v'yil itzin godlim te'telich, she's going to be quite upset if she doesn't get to go, then even those who do have the custom, muter selich l'spal, she could still go. V'chein chol k'yetz b'zeh, any situation where it would be very important for her to go to Shul, the custom does not prohibit her from doing so. Kegain shemasiya esbino abita, she's marrying off a child, so we have an ofruf, like if she yolades, or if she just gave birth to a child, shegil esbanal namalach b'zakneses, that she wants to go to shul and listen to a bracha to say amen muteres. So this sort of wraps up the laws of our chakas. We ran through them a little bit quickly over here, but these are the basic ideas that he should not be touching, they should not be touching each other or passing things or throwing things. When they eat at the same table, they should have a hechaka, something to remind them, something different on the table. He should not be eating her leftovers, food or drink, but she is permitted to eat his. They should not be sleeping in the same bed or beds that are touching each other and or in each other's beds, even without the other person in it. There's the Ashkenazi custom of not sitting on the same swing or small boat and maybe a couch, and he should be careful not to gaze at places that he normally doesn't want to look at. And we mentioned a few other customs, and then another important thing that we mentioned was about him or her serving each other, that they shouldn't place the item directly in front of the person, but they should make some sort of shinoi and to remind them of the situation. And then we talked about that if one of them is sick, then there is a little bit more room to be lenient, at least if the husband is sick. So this sort of wraps up the hachakas, and it just, again, nice to mention that hopefully by keeping the hachakas properly, when the wife does become tar, it gives that rejuvenation to the marriage and preserves the freshness.